theoretically possible.
Why waste time?
But it doesn't make any sense.
Discovery Houston, press to ATO.
3, 2, 1.
What up, everyone? How are you doing today, Quinn?
Good, how are you?
I'm very good. My mind's a little bit blown, but I'm gonna do my very best to explain why and what's going on in there.
Yeah, I think that I'm really excited to get into your brain, first of all, as always. But today's topic is really interesting and something that we've been definitely doing a deep dive into lately. I think it's a really interesting concept. Today we're talking about the world of digital assets being auctioned off.
Digital art collectibles, pretty much is the term. And it's something that is quite mind-boggling because we all know what collectibles are. They're things that are increased in value based on how rare they are. But when it comes to the digital world, that doesn't really exist because everything can just be copied. You know, like if you upload music, I mean, Napster was so successful because you can just replicate the same MP3 file over and over again, and then everyone has access to it everywhere. And same can be done with images and different documents as well. And they're trying to figure out different ways of how to essentially ensure that one single file or document is protected and it's only available for a few people in some form of minted. And you can say that there's some platforms like iTunes that prevents like the replication of music from everyone being able to just take it and then replicate it, but the same goes that you can still take that MP3 file and then make copies of it. Yeah. But now we're looking at digital art and they're tokenizing it so that you're unable to replicate it unless it's clearly a replica. Therefore it loses value.
Right. So basically what they're trying to do is essentially figure out how to put a digital fingerprint on these digital assets for anyone and everyone to be able to identify what was the original. If there were copies of this, that those are all actually just copies. Those aren't actually the real, the one piece that it all originated from.
Right.
And it's interesting to think about it. I think when we're talking about art, like digital art or like, I mean, this could be anything that's digital. This could be a PDF. This could be a video. This could be a video clip. It could be audio.
It could be a loop.
It could be a GIF. It could be so many different things.
Yeah.
And I mean, it obviously all, like, we're talking about auctioning this kind of stuff off. So I think this is where, like, step one, it's difficult to kind of wrap your head around, like, why would anyone actually buy a digital asset that is obviously so easy to just copy and spread around everywhere else. But I think that the best example of how we've seen this actually kind of come together and like online is the music industry, right? Yeah. The music industry, technically, I mean, it took so many years and they're still struggling to figure this out, right? Mm-hmm. But I think they've got a better handle on it, obviously way more than when like LimeWire and Napster was out, when like anyone and everyone could just download the music for free.
Yeah.
They've got copyright. They've got different.
And they changed the game by setting up a platform where it's not all about downloading anymore. It's all about streaming, which makes it completely different for the music industry.
It does. But you know, you can't make money by using certain music if you haven't already paid for the rights, right? Yeah. And they're across different platforms, they'll basically flag you to be able to prevent you from making money and say like, hey, you're in violation of this copyright law. So that took a long time, but that only exists embedded into that digital asset, into the audio file, right?
Yeah.
It took a long time to figure out. But now what we're talking about is anything digital, how can one envision the future of like an auction house, like we're talking about like art, or we're talking about cars, or we're talking about
trading cards
and trading cards, all of those, like, you know, sports cars or Pokemon and stuff like that. How can we actually envision a world, a future where all of those physical assets are actually now digital, and those digital assets are rare and they are purchased and exchanged basically through like an online auction?
Right. I think maybe we need to attempt to simplify this and really like challenge ourselves to make this easy for grandma to understand.
Yeah.
So if you look at the Mona Lisa, there's only one Mona Lisa on planet Earth in the Louvre, and it's created by Da Vinci himself.
Yes.
And how many replications are of the Mona Lisa. Probably thousands.
Millions. I mean, you could get a postcard with her face on it.
So that's it. Yeah, that's a replica as well. Yeah. But, and then there's also the replicas that probably, if you pulled them up side by side, they looked pretty damn close to almost identical. But there's none that are going to be comparable in price to the one and only Mona Lisa. And we don't really have a way to verify that that's the one and only. Like, if someone took it, they'd have to really do a full-on like art inspection to verify, like, oh, this is the one. We checked the age of the paint and the signature and all these little things that, you know, you can't replicate, right? Now we're looking at this new digital world where now things can be replicated. So let's just transition from the Mona Lisa to like Pokemon cards, right?
Right.
So in Pokemon, the most valued card by far is the Charizard card, which is like a little orangey dragon that blows fire out of his mouth. And everyone goes absolutely ballistic for it. It ranges in price from, you know, $1 million to like $700,000, all depending on the quality of it and what year it was printed. Now, they can make new additions with the Charizard card, but those will also have to be verified as showing that's a new edition. Now we're entering the digital era where everything prior to the infrastructure of blockchain technology could be replicated. But now we're looking at it where they're actually validating it with a code so that you can see this is the code of the very first. So let's pretend there is a new piece of art, and the new piece of art is a beautiful hummingbird, and they're only making three of those. So then there would be three separate codes of the same piece of art, and then a ledger is a spreadsheet is associated with every single one of those pieces of art, and it can say exactly when it was produced and then who purchased it on what day and how long they owned it for. And then the only time that changes is when that person sells it again, and it says how much they bought it for on what date, and that will continue to get updated as time goes on. Therefore, it's timestamped. There's only three of them. That's the value. It's kind of a mind-boggling thing because it really makes you think about how you can put value on something digital when in the real world it's kind of difficult for me to even just make sense of a Pokemon card being worth $700,000 as well, you know. So it's a whole new world, and this is just starting to explode like on a whole new level, and I'm honestly astonished with the direction that it's going. You can get in the game as low as like for $200. You can start being a participant in collecting some of these digital art collectibles, but some of them are going for insane amount of money. I mean, the CryptoKitty, which is another form of digital art, except these digital arts, this is going to sound so crazy, but they were basically little cats, and they had different specialties about each cat, like color of their hair or color of their eyes, and you can actually mate the cats together, and then we make a new cat. And so you can create really rare cats, and it ends up that one of those sold for six figures like a while ago. Mm-hmm. And now we're looking at the new era of digital art being created by these artists, some of which are quite famous in, you know, the physical art world. And they're creating these pieces of art that are selling for like $77,000 online. And it looks like a screensaver, but it's something that there's only one of. Of course, you could take a picture, screenshot of that image and have it displayed on your TV screen, but it's not the original, and therefore it's not worth $77,000.
Yeah.
I'm trying to make sense of it. I mean, if you want to try to explain
it's a fascinating
Grandpa John, that would help a lot.
No, I think you explained it very well. I think that what's interesting is I think we have to kind of go back to what the blockchain is. Remember that a blockchain is a public ledger where transactions get chain linked together one after another in time, right? And validated. And as they're validated on this open ledger that is completely public, everyone can see it.
Yeah.
If something gets changed within a block after it's already in the blockchain, something's wrong. And it actually is really, really difficult to fix that, right?
So the ledger is like a spreadsheet.
Yeah.
And a lot of people are participating in validating the transactions that are occurring on the spreadsheet. And it's as if the spreadsheet is shared amongst all the participants who are validating the transactions.
Yeah, it's shared publicly on a decentralized network. So it's right. not, you know, housed or stored, like the information in the ledger is not housed in one single server area. It's basically shared across a bunch of different computers and different nodes and whatnot. Yeah.
This is really good that we're like practicing trying to explain this in every single way possible because it is so complicated to understand. I mean, we were talking about this earlier, like the idea of making a purchase on the internet in the early 90s was super scary.
Yeah,
like imagine putting in your credit card and you're freaking out about that moment right when it's about to occur. I feel like this is kind of where the blockchain technology is at, where it's super complicated and it's almost kind of uncomfortable to not only like participate in it, but to be able to have a conversation about
it. Well, the truth is you don't actually, what's going to happen in the next 10 years is you're not even going to need to know how the blockchain works. But we're explaining it to you now because I think that it has a lot to do with why some of these concepts like CryptoKitties and these digital art, you know, assets that are being created, why they can possibly store value over time, right? And so just think of a ledger as just like, it's what we've been doing for thousands and thousands of years. We document information on a ledger, right? So I paid you this amount of money for a burrito and you gave me the burrito. That transaction occurred. A ledger records that transaction. Now it's not just transaction. It's like anything, right? And so right now in terms of art and, you know, collectibles and auction houses, like how do we actually know that the original Banksy, for example, Banksy is a graffiti artist that has, I mean, his art has been sold for lots and lots of money.
Yeah, he's out of the UK.
Yeah, he's out of the UK. And how do we know that that's an actual original Banksy? You know, people, there are so many people who try to replicate Banksy's art and style. So it's really difficult to know whether or not, and Banksy's a very anonymous type of an individual too. Yeah. He doesn't make money off of his own art. That's not his
thing. We don't
know
what his face looks like. And we don't know what his real name is.
He's anonymous. And that's another huge aspect with the blockchain, right? It's all about securing your privacy and your anonymity, that you can actually pay for things without the other person knowing who you are, but it's a trustless transaction. You don't, like, you trust that it actually will happen, but you don't need to know the other person.
Right.
And so when it comes to collectibles, right now we rely on centralized institutions like Christie's, the Christie's art auction house, right?
Yeah.
They are the ones who say, yeah, this is the actual real deal. And how do they actually know that? Well, there are hours and hours poured into research and fact checking and making sure that there are, and you know, there's forensic
stuff that they can do. There's the VIN number that they verify on different parts of the car. That's a major way to confirm that it's all the same car. But even that could be changed, whereas these digital assets, you can't actually go back and change what it originally was. Once it's stamped by the producer or the host, the company, the platform itself, it is forever that transaction. So once a transaction occurs, you can't delete the fact that that transaction occurred because it's decentralized, because it's verified by multiple, like many, many different individuals who are hosting this platform in with incentive to get coin back to them.
Exactly.
It's so complicated.
It's difficult, but I think what's really interesting is, okay, so these digital pieces of art now we're talking about in a decentralized system, right?
Yeah.
They're being created. Now, remember, all collectibles, the only value that they actually have is when we all agree that this is a really rare and valuable thing, right? Even if a Picasso was the one of one and rare, we would have, that would only sell for a whole bunch of money if we all say, yeah, we agree that Picasso is an amazing artist. This is very rare. He's one to look up to. If we didn't care about Picasso, his stuff wouldn't matter.
It's simply supply and demand.
It is supply and demand, but there's also got to be a sense of like, I value this, right? A lot of people will say Pokemon cards, why the heck would I even care about that?
Yeah.
But there are a lot
of demand
people,
has
there's
to
a
be
huge,
high.
Yeah, exactly.
Right.
Well, so these digital assets, what they're being, how they're being created. Now follow along with me here.
Yeah.
They are created by this concept called NFTs, right? Non-fungible tokens.
Mm-hmm.
So normally you've heard of cryptocurrencies that are all built on blockchains, right?
Mm-hmm.
So these cryptocurrencies can be replicated, right? You want a lot of the times miners and staking, and we don't have to talk about all that stuff.
Yeah,
but the creation
for grandma.
The creation of more coins
is
usually like, that's part of the system. That's what you want, right?
Yeah.
And it doesn't matter which coin it is. They're all kind of the same, right? Now with these pieces of digital art, they're being created with non-fungible tokens. So that means that token that is represented by this one asset cannot be it can't be fixed. I mean, it can't be changed. Yeah, it's fixed in that one asset.
Yeah, so it can't be replicated either. It's one of one, for that token. So the art piece, there may be like 3 or 4 or 100 of that single art piece, but they all have their own unique token code associated with them.
So just think of it like this non-fungible token has all the information about that asset. Exactly. So like if we put, you know, if we put a Ferrari 250 GTO onto, you know, the blockchain, this is, just think of it as a digital asset, right? Yeah, it was just like a sketch from an artist that was rare of a 250 GTO back in the day, right?
Right.
And we're digitizing it. Now, all the information about that specific piece will be encoded on that non-fungible token. So if you purchase it on an auction, like say I buy it for like 500 Bitcoin, which would be ridiculous right now, especially right now, right? But I buy it, now I get that non-fungible token, and that transaction that I purchased, that non-fungible token will be recorded on the public ledger. So everyone knows that I'm the one. They don't know who I am, but they know that
Unless you want them to. You can explicitly say this is owned by Quinn Button.
But that's such
but it's your choice.
It's a powerful thing with a decentralized system, is that you really, your privacy is up to you. Whatever you share with other third parties or with other people, it's up to you.
Yeah.
And for the most part, a lot of people like to be private with that kind of stuff. Right. So, and it's great, you know, it's really interesting, but this is a very, very new concept to a lot of people. Now there are a lot of early adopters who are already doing this, right? But now here, okay, so you already described the CryptoKitty phenomenon. That was like kind of the first thing, right? Now there are a lot of other artists who are starting to play the game, creating really beautiful stuff online. Now I think that the big accelerator of this whole industry was definitely the NBA card thing. So do you want to explain that?
Yeah, I'll do my best to explain it. It's basically a platform where it is fully in partnership with the NBA, and you are able to purchase a moment from the NBA. So a specific player's moment within a game or perhaps a playoff or the finals, and it could be a dunk, it could be a three-pointer shot, it could be a steal, something that was memorable, perhaps something that would make the top 10 plays of the day, that you can actually own that moment. Now they make more than one single moment. Like, so there's, it could be like LeBron James dunk in the finals in 2012, right? And in that dunk, they can actually make maybe 7 of those, and they could be viewed as like digital cards. And now there's 7 of them, and each one has its own token code, and you can buy, you can get that moment through purchasing it on the marketplace where you bought it from someone else, or you could get it perhaps from buying a pack. So you can pay like $1,000 and it's completely blind. You don't know what it's going to be. It's similar to like a Pokemon pack in real life, where you're buying this basically a little envelope worth of cards and you have no idea what's inside. You open it up, and then once you open it up, you see what you received. And that's one way that you can get it. And a lot of people have been finding that they get like a really valuable moment, or the marketplace values it as very high, but you end up paying, you know, very low for that pack. So it's a little bit of a gambling lottery, very similar to how Pokemon is too. But now it's all digital, and they're just about to launch their game, which allows you to play with these moments against other individuals. So it'll be similar to like Magic cards or similar to Pokemon, the game itself. I don't know how many people actually play the Pokemon game, but I know a lot of people do play like Magic, the Gathering.
Yeah.
And so it's a really innovative way for NBA to really capitalize on a whole new market, because the marketplace itself is centralized. They own that in partnership with this other company that helped put together this program for anyone who wants to participate. And there's a percentage fee for every transaction that occurs on the marketplace. So it allows them to just capitalize on creating their asset into a digital format, which, I mean, like, do you really own the moment? You don't really own the moment. What do you own? You own this little play. This, it's like a video clip of someone doing this moment. And it's kind of cool. I'm trying to just make sense of it all, because when I look at the physical world of things, I do think it's bonkers that baseball cards or Pokemon cards can go for that price, but I get it. But at the same time, this is just taking it that much further away from my comprehension when it's in digital format. But I do get it. But at the same time, I don't really see how you could invest into it without it be considering gambling. Without it be considered gambling. It's confusing to me.
It is really interesting. I think that the whole thing with the NBA, is it NBA Hot Shot or something like that?
Yeah. I think their game's called Top Shot.
Top Shot. Thank you. Yeah. So with basically the NBA outsourced and hired the guys who created CryptoKitties, right?
Mm-hmm.
And they formed a new company called Draper. And Draper is now starting to make these private, decentralized blockchains, right? So essentially, I mean, it kind of goes against what decentralization really is because it's privatized and the NBA is really the one who gets the majority of the capital from all of this. So but that's a debate for another time. But really what the NBA is doing is it's essentially commoditizing its virtual assets.
Yeah, I mean, exactly.
And they are really focused on a lot of the games in 2020 because the NBA bubble is a unique occurrence that will probably never happen again. Like that, I think, is a really interesting thing too, is like moments of time, moments of history that will never replicate themselves again. Like the NBA will never go back to that. It will never be that ever again. So moments that happened in the bubble in Disney World basically become super valuable because it was one of one event that will never happen again. So you can kind of start to see, okay, they're implementing the concept of rarity, right? They're only offering digital assets from that one year that will never happen again. So if there's an assist that happened then, that's pretty rare. But if it was a dunk or a game winning shot or something like that, that's the most rare, right? Yeah. So what they're doing is they're not only making the assets themselves as a class rare because it's pulling from the 2020 NBA bubble, right? Mm-hmm. The digital assets, and they're cutting up different video clips of the best plays. But what they're doing in these drops, right? It's kind of like a shoe drop or like, you know, unboxing shoes. Yeah. You usually get like a lot of junk, but then you get a few really good ones. And in the Pokemon card envelopes that you've been talking about too, they usually say there's at least one hologram, right? So a hologram is more rare. So that's kind of what they're doing with these drops, is there are tiers of rarity and they're limiting the amount of game winning shots. Those are like the absolute top of the top.
The top ones are called legendary.
Legendary. Yeah. So those are the most legendary plays that occurred in 2020, right? And then there's another level, and I don't know what that is, but then there are
the lowest one's basic.
The lowest one's basic. So, you know, maybe he made an assist and it was fine and it was just a normal player, right?
Yeah.
Also, depending on how big of a celebrity or how good the person is on that card.
Yeah.
And so now you can kind of start, if you've ever collected baseball cards or anything like that, you know that, like, you know, Jackie Robinson baseball card would be worth so much more, or, you know, Mark McGwire, like all these different cards, depending on how big of a baseball player they were back in the day or currently right now, really makes the price fluctuate. So you can kind of see how they're applying different ways that the physical world has valued a certain asset. They're applying that to the digital world, but then they're actually taking it a level higher because they can. In the digital world, you can definitely create assets that are really interesting and valuable to some people. Now, some people are probably gonna listen to this and be like, why the heck would I even care about a video clip from the 2020, you know, NBA season? Well, there are a lot of people who do. I mean, well, why does anyone collect stamps? Why does anyone collect certain things? I think that that's really kind of it's a barrier a lot of people are going to have to get over. But it is happening. And there's a whole generation of people who don't really even care about physical objects. They care way more about the digital world, and that's the world that they live in. So if you think about how there are generations now who don't even know of a world without the internet or anything like that, you can definitely see that the value of their things that they love will exist online.
Yeah, in digital format.
In a
certified digital format. Yeah. The other thing, so I'm starting to think about what type of questions I would have if I was Grandpa Juan, and I would be asking, well, how do you know that they're not going to replicate that moment and make more of them? And what we've seen in baseball cards or in Pokemon cards is they do end up replicating the card that's rare. They make first edition, second edition, third edition. And in all those cases in baseball and any kind of collectible, The first edition is always worth the most, and the third edition is worth less than the second edition. That's pretty consistent. And so if they do end up making more of those moments, those legendary moments, it could be okay because they're going to have some kind of certification of this was the first edition, this is fifth edition, et cetera, et cetera. So it's just opening it up. I mean, it's basically taking playing cards, you know, like collectible cards, and making them digital. And the NBA is the very first to be doing this. And I'm expecting that we'll start seeing a lot of these other playing cards like Pokemon go fully digital.
Yep.
But they're going to have to embrace the technology in full. And it's kind of transitioning from, I don't know, in a weird way, it's like gold to cryptocurrency or gold to Bitcoin, you know, like going from physical cash to credit card. And it's all very exciting. It's sometimes quite confusing. It's also, I would say, it is kind of dangerous to get involved in without really understanding the ins and outs of it, because the rarity of these items, I mean, is there going to be a marketplace that's going to be the most prominent marketplace? And I think that's a big battle that's going on right now, because you can get these digital assets on a variety of websites, but how do you display them is one thing that I think is going to be a game changer. So if you're buying a piece of art, whoop-de-doo, you got the art, it's on your phone, you can show people, hey, look, I got this art and it's one of one and I paid $10,000 for it. People are going to be like, that's nuts. But if you had, you know, art all over your house and you had some kind of a TV screen that could display art, now you're able to show what you've been able to collect. You could essentially have your own digital museum in your household. Yeah. And so it's starting to come together. I do think you got to kind of pay attention to which pieces of art you feel like, if you're going to participate in it, you should go online. You can go into type in Nifty Gateway and you'll find a variety of drops that are occurring. But I think that the key is to actually go in there with a strategy. If you're trying to make money off it, if you just want to collect it because it's cool, then go for it and just pick the ones that you feel are most interesting. But the prices typically, I would say, range between like $200 to $1,000 for a drop. There's one that happened a few days ago and it was one of one and went for $50,000. So they do get up there, but you know, play it however you feel is most appealing to you. If you want to just play, then, and you have money to play, then play. But if you want to try to make money off of it, I do think it's important to really try to figure out who is this artist. You know, do the background check.
Yeah.
What are my percentage odds if you're opening a pack? What are my percentage odds of getting a legendary versus a basic card of my 9 cards that I'm going to get? You know, do the math on it all. And then you got to kind of figure out how comfortable you are with investing into that marketplace in the long-term future.
Yeah, I couldn't agree more. I think that with anything that you buy, it's imperative that you do your due diligence. Mm-hmm. I think, you know, if you're going to buy a car at a car auction, you better know everything about that car.
Yeah.
It shouldn't be something that you just buy on an impulse. And this is a very new world. So if you're trying to like buy and flip, I think that it's still a very nascent industry where understanding who has the most valuable art online that is digital is really difficult to fully understand, but it's an amazing and an interesting, very, very interesting industry that is emerging. And it does threaten a lot of traditional auction houses that are more centralized institutional figures.
But
and
they could lean into it and it could become something completely different. But you brought up a good point. It's not only investing into the marketplace that you feel is going to be the strong marketplace for you to be able to exchange these forms of digital currency. So in the Top Shot NBA one, how likely do you think that's going to be something that's going to be prominent in 10 years? If you really believe in that, that's one thing. And then the second thing, though, within the digital art aspect is, how likely do you think that this artist is going to be a superstar in the future? When they do these drops, I've been looking at some of the artists, some of them only have like 10,000 followers on Instagram.
Right.
Which artist do you believe is going to have 1 million followers in 5 years?
Right.
If they do get 1 million followers, I guarantee you the piece of art that you bought 5 years earlier when that person only had 37,000 followers, that piece of art is going to be much more valuable if the marketplace still exists and they're staying consistent with new collections. Like, it's a long-term game.
Well, I think that what's really interesting about this new world of digital assets being auctioned off is, honestly, Well, one, you have brand new people coming into the game of art, right? Mm-hmm. There are people who have held on to their cryptocurrency for a decade or longer. And so they now have way more assets in crypto than they do in US dollars. Right. And that actually gives a whole shift in power, I think, to different people in terms of what they value and what they think long-term will become really valuable.
Definitely.
Number two is really, I think, more than anything, with digital assets, digital art, we now have more tangible quantitative measurements of this person is absolutely amazing and everyone agrees on that. Like you just said, followers, right? Yeah. Why is Picasso? Why is Picasso the one that everyone goes crazy over? Why Leonardo da Vinci? I could probably argue that a little bit more. I love Picasso. I'm not saying I don't, but I think that there's kind of this art is very speculative and it's very subjective, right? Yeah. Like you might say, okay, well, I don't care if Picasso is worth millions of dollars. Yeah. I would never really want to buy that anyways, right?
Physical art can be very word of mouth and you can't capture that word of mouth exactly unless you're looking at like total amount of articles or something else, you know?
Yeah, so in a weird way, it's almost kind of democratizing the value we place on future modern art.
Yeah.
And as opposed to, oh, well, because the auction house Christie's said that this was worth this much, that's how much it is. Like, why?
Yeah.
And I think that there's been a lot of, I mean, young people, I hear this over and over again, like, I really don't understand why modern art goes for so much. I mean, people even older do too. And I think that the real measurement for the most part that we've used in terms of valuing art and collectibles has been time. I mean, even if you think about Pokemon cards, the most rare ones are the original ones from like the 90s, right?
Yeah.
So that takes time.
It does.
Now here with digital assets, it's going to take time too, but I think that there will be more influence by the people of like who deserves to actually have more value, significantly more value than this artist over here.
Yeah.
And it'll be really interesting to see how it all pans out.
This will be very interesting. Yeah, absolutely. I'm still trying to wrap my head around it. I hope that we were able to help you wrap your head around something that's quite exciting and confusing, but very exciting to see develop in the future.
I think so. And I think this is, I mean, it's a very new and, like you said, developing space, but watch out for it. It's gonna sneak up on you and all of a sudden you're gonna look around and be like, wait, how did this happen? So you heard it first here on Life Out of the Box.
Yep.
Go check it out. And we can't wait to talk to you guys tomorrow. If you have a moment, please rate, review us on Apple Podcasts. It really helps us out. And we will talk to you mañana.
Hasta luego.
Bye.